Good morning, everyone. Every now and then somebody will ask me before I get up to speak, maybe it's at the beginning of the worship service, maybe in between Bible class, well, what are you going to preach on today? And I don't want to tell you at that point. I've always been a little bit weird that way. I've always wanted to introduce my lessons in the way that I want to. And so I never liked it when somebody would, I mean, I don't get mad about it or anything, but I would just rather not have to tell somebody ahead of time what I'm going to preach on at that service. Some years ago when I was a young preacher, I was preaching with an older man, and I would generally preach on Sunday evenings. And at the conclusion of every Sunday morning service, he would say, "Marty, what you going to preach on tonight?" You know, so I had to speak up and tell everybody what I was going to preach on tonight. You know. And I don't like to do that. And so I just kind of started getting in the habit of saying, "Well, I'm going to preach on sin." And I just kind of solved the whole thing, you know. Because about every lesson in some way, shape, or form deals with sin, doesn't it? Well, guess what I want to preach on this morning? I want to preach on sin. I want to talk with you about the question of what is sin? You know, the Bible says that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And indeed, the Bible teaches us that if we say that we have not sinned, we are indeed a liar. And so all of us are sinners, and it is the perennial problem that we face. And it is, in fact, such a problem that the Bible teaches us God, before he even made us, conceived of the plan whereby his son would be the remedy to our sin. So this really is an important topic for us to address. And so I want to talk with you this morning, first of all, about what is sin. And sometimes when we are asked that question, or when we think of that question, we perhaps maybe think of a passage like what we see in 1 John 3, a passage that teaches us that sin is a violation of law. John writes, "Everyone who practices sin also practices lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness." And so there's a passage that seems to indicate, and certainly does indicate, that when you think about sin, one way that you can think about that is a law standard, a law code that one has violated. That's really what the idea of lawlessness indicates, someone who is not walking in accordance with the law. And so when we think about sin in that way, we probably think of it in a judicial sense or a forensic sense, and we can kind of envision God as this judge, and the gavel is indeed slammed down, and someone is guilty and pronounced guilty of being a sinner because it's been shown that here's the law, and they violated that. And it certainly is true that sin is a violation of law, and I don't want anyone to think that that's not the case. But I want to say to you that if that's all you think of when you think of being a sinner, that you violated the law, or if all you think of is, "I violated God's law," even if that's all you think of, I want to suggest to you that you're not really appreciating the full gravity of sin. I think it's important that we do appreciate this. May I suggest to you that when we think about sin, we need to think of it in terms of being an offense against a person? That's really what sin is. When we sin against our fellow man, we're sinning against people. We're wronging people. In fact, even in our system of jurisprudence, our criminal system, when someone wants to ask for leniency, we don't ask a criminal to apologize to the law book. No one brings the Florida Book of Criminal Law with all of the various legal statutes and asks a person to apologize to that statute book. Because even when we think about the concept of man's law and the violation of it. It's more than just the violation of some set of rules. There are people involved that we've wronged. In fact, even in our system of jurisprudence, we talk about the case being the people of the state of Florida versus so-and-so. And that's even how they are described. Those cases are described as the people versus the defendant. Because it's the people that ultimately are wronged. Because in our country, certainly it is the case that the people are the ones who have decided upon these laws. And so when people violate those laws, it is a personal offense against the people with whom one is engaged in society. That's the way it is with man's law. That's also the way it is with God's law. In fact, I want to emphasize to you how important it is for us to really appreciate that it's when sin is recognized to be against a person, that's when we really appreciate the gravity of it. Isn't that the reason why? When it comes to our attention that we have done something wrong towards somebody else, we might be concerned about that, or we might have a sense of guilt about that, just contemplating that, even before we ever come in contact with that person. But when we come in contact with that person whom we've wronged and have to look them eye to eye, isn't that when we get the lump in our throat? Isn't that when the tears begin to well up in our eyes? Isn't that when it becomes such an emotional thing? Isn't that when it's most likely that the real gravity of our actions really comes to our attention? It's not when we're thinking about there being some kind of moral code out there that we violated. It's when we think about the fact that, okay, here's a person that I've wronged. Here's a person I've done something against. Sin is more than just a violation of law. It's more than just a violation of God's law. Sin is an offense against a person. And what I want you to appreciate is that ultimately sin is an offense against the person God. I think sometimes we don't appreciate God as a person. He's God. Can't see Him. We can't touch Him physically. We can't hear Him speak to us in some audible way. And it's easy for us, therefore, to depersonalize God. Since our contact with Him and our communication with Him is through this book, it's easy for us then to just think about sin as being a violation of the law that He has given to us right here. But then that takes us back to this idea that, well, sin is just lawlessness, it's just a violation of law, and it depersonalizes the entire thing. What we need to understand is God is a person. And when we sin, we are wronging Him because He's ultimately the one who's made all those laws in the first place. As we talked about in this morning's auditorium class, He is the one who is the very basis, in fact, the one who validates morality. Because He Himself is moral, and all of these laws spring from His very nature. And so when we violate His laws, it's a slap against God as a person. It's a slap against His sense of morality that's intrinsic to Him. It's a slap against everything that He is and everything that He stands for. I would suggest to you that that's what David understood in Psalm 51. It's a psalm that, according to the psalm heading, informs us that David wrote this psalm in the aftermath of his sin with Bathsheba, and therefore his sin against Uriah the Hittite, against his people, all of that horrible incident that we read about in 2 Samuel chapter 11 and 12. David in this psalm says, "Be gracious to me, O God, according to your loving kindness." And then in verse 4, he makes this statement, "Against you, you only, I have sinned and done what is evil in your sight." Against you, I have sinned. In fact, he even says, "Against you and you only, I have sinned." Which I would take to be a statement of his recognition, David's recognition, that ultimately God is the ultimate lawgiver, and even though David had sinned against human beings, ultimately all sin is against the one and only God, against that one and only God and only him, only that one lawgiver. David had sinned. But David recognized it was a personal affront to God that he had sinned and violated God's commandments. Is that the way that we think of this whole process of sin? You see, if we don't see it in that way, then sin's not really going to seem to us to be that big of a deal. If it's just a violation of some statute on some law book, even if it's some heavenly law book, if it's only that, it has so depersonalized the whole concept of sin that it really loses its gravity and its weight. But I'm going to say to you, brethren, this morning, that that's not the way God feels about it. In fact, look at some passages here. Micah chapter 5. Here's where Yahweh was talking to Israel and Judah specifically about how they had sinned against him. Tell me if you don't think he takes sin personally. My people, what have I done to you? And how have I wearied you? Answer me. Indeed, I brought you up from the land of Egypt and ransomed you from the house of slavery. And I sent before you Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. My people, remember. Here is God the Father who is begging his people to remember all of the good blessings that he had done for them in their history. To think about that. And to realize that they were treating him with such disrespect and such dishonor, as if he were someone whom they could just discard and dismiss. And yet he's saying, we've had a relationship. And I have been your God, and I have blessed you in all this way, and I brought you up out of the land of Egypt. I've done all of these things. How can you now so turn against me? Isn't that the feeling you get from God's statements there? Isn't he taking it rather personally? How else can God take sin except personally? It is a personal offense against him. It is a personal affront against him. And he does take it personally. Folks, I am convinced that the reason why people's consciences are not pricked, the reason why there are some people who aren't cut to the quick when these things are brought out, and others' consciences are cut to the quick, is because those people who are not affected, those people who are not moved, those people who are not emotional about it, they really don't allow themselves to think about God as a real person. There's a lot of people that intellectually believe in God. And we've been talking in our evidences class about theism versus atheism. There's a lot of theists out there. There's a lot of believers in God out there who really don't think of God, though, personally. Intellectually, they know he's there. They'd answer that on the test question, yeah. But they don't have a real sense of God looking at them and watching them. They ignore him throughout the day. They don't have a sense of God being disappointed in them and being hurt as he sees his human children commit such egregious wrongs against him. I'm convinced that's why people don't have their consciences pricked and they're not motivated to remorse and a true godly sorrow that leads to repentance. But this is the way God views it personally. Hosea 11. Look at what Hosea, or what God says here in Hosea as he speaks about Israel. Look at the language he uses here. When Israel was a youth, I loved him. And out of Egypt, I called my son. The more they called them, the more they went from them. They kept sacrificing to the Baals and burning incense to idols. Yet it is I who taught Ephraim to walk. I took them in my arms. God wants His people to recognize that even though He is this great, awesome God who is so far above them, for goodness sakes, don't depersonalize Him. He says, I view you exactly the way that you view your little toddler that you're taking by the hand and trying to help take his first steps. We got a few examples of that here in this group, don't we? He says, I took you, Ephraim, in my arms, the way a loving father takes his child into his arms and looks into that child's eyes and smiles upon that child. God says, that's how I feel about you. And yet what's happened is that from the very time of your youth, when I brought you as a child out of Egypt, as my son whom I loved, from that earliest period on, what you have done is you've rejected me and you've gone over to other gods and served other masters and other fathers, and the more the prophets appealed to you, the more you went from them, and you went further and rapidly over and over and over again to other fathers, and here I am, I'm the one who is your true father. That's how God feels about our sin. That's how God feels about us when we turn away from Him. Do we appreciate the gravity of sin? Do we really understand what this is that we're talking about? A little bit further in the same chapter of Hosea, so my people are bent on turning from me. Though they call them to the one on high, none at all exalts them. And then listen to God. How can I give you up, O Ephraim? How can I surrender you, O Israel? My heart is turned over within me. All my compassions are kindled. Now, if you recall the context of the prophet Hosea and his life and what's going on here, those words of God will have a lot more impact to you. Because what God had Hosea do from the very beginning of the book was to go and marry a woman from the lower side of the moral tracks, from the dark side of society, someone who was probably not going to be a moral person. And sure enough, as it turned out, Hosea's wife became unfaithful to him. She committed adultery against him. So much so that the first child that she bore to him apparently was Hosea's, but the other two certainly weren't. And the whole point of that, and all that God is saying here, is that emotional feeling of, say, a husband whose wife has strayed and been unfaithful to him as a husband, that gut-wrenching feeling, that's how God feels when His people turn away from Him. If we get that, if we really grasp that, there's no way that we can treat sin as just a light matter. And there's no way that we can treat the idea of seeking God's forgiveness, it's just kind of a matter of just going through these steps. Oh yeah, I just kind of go through these five steps to get baptized finally, and then I'm forgiven. Okay. Or if I'm a Christian, but I'm an erring Christian, well, I just come forward and just do this. Okay, so I'll take care of it. If we really understand the person of God and how hurt He is by our sin, then we're going to approach Him and appeal to Him to forgive us in a much different way. In a humble way, in a more thoughtful way, in a more guilt-ridden way, and a more determined way to not commit the same kind of wrong against Him in the future. We're going to be more determined than ever to now be faithful and to now do what is right and to be the kind of person that we need to be. If we really understand that sin is an offense against God, this person, we need to appreciate that point. And I'll tell you, I think one of the reasons why God came to the earth in the form of Jesus of Nazareth was to kind of help us understand the personhood of God and to relate to God on that person-to-person level a little bit more. John says in John 1 verse 14 that the Word, that is the Word who was with God in the beginning, who was God, he says the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And what we need to appreciate is the fact that when we think about Jesus of Nazareth, we're looking and thinking about God who took on human form. God who took on the form of a human person. So that we perhaps could better understand and better relate to God's personhood. So we could see God on our level and recognize that yes, He is a person. And yes, He is someone who has those emotions and that feelings like I do. And the reason why we share those emotions and feelings is because I'm made in His image. And therefore, I'm like Him in all of that. Don't you think it was gut-wrenching for the Apostle John in those years of his Christian life to think back about that time when he stood, of all of the 12 apostles, apparently he was the only one who finally came and was there at the foot of that cross. He didn't stand up for his master, but he was there when he was crucified. And don't you think it was gut-wrenching for him to think back about that master whom he loved? In fact, John himself was that beloved disciple. He and Jesus had that personal bond, that close bond. And John, don't you know that John absolutely understood how he'd wronged a person, how he'd wronged God and God as a person? And that's, folks, the way that John wants us to feel about all of this and to think about Jesus. In fact, I think this is what we need to appreciate when we as Christian people, when we willfully choose to not serve Jesus the way that we should. Here's what the Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 28. Anyone who has set aside the law of Moses dies without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. How much severer punishment do you think he will deserve who has trampled underfoot the Son of God and has regarded as unclean the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified and has insulted the Spirit of grace? I tell you what, if you ever want a passage to help you appreciate that sin is not just a violation of Christ's law, here it is. Because here the Hebrew writer makes a contrast between the punishment that would be justly deserved under the old covenant system versus the just punishment of the new covenant system if you violate those statutes. But though he talks about the person dying without mercy, who has violated that old law, he doesn't just talk about a person who willfully rejects the new covenant of Jesus as just violating the testaments of Christianity or the commandments of the new covenant. No, look at what he says. The person who has willfully, and this is what he's talking about, not a Christian who has been striving and made a mistake, but a Christian who's willfully choosing to not do in accordance with Jesus' teaching. Here the Hebrew writer says he has trampled underfoot the Son of God. Trampled underfoot the Son of God. Remember when they took the body of Jesus down from the cross? Those soldiers took it down, gave it to Joseph of Arimathea to have it buried.
What would you think of somebody that, as Joseph was approaching that corpse to begin to bury, what if those soldiers just stamped over that body and passed on by? What a tremendous sign of disrespect and dishonor. And the Hebrew writer says, that's what we do. When we just willfully choose to just reject the teaching of Jesus, then we're just trampling over the Son of God. And he says we're regarding the blood of this new covenant by which we are cleansed, we are regarding it as something unclean, something that we do not even want to have any contact with, something that is beneath us, something dirty, something offensive. But that's the blood of Jesus. That's the blood that he shed as that atonement price for our sin. There is no higher price that could be paid than that. That's what his blood is all about. And we regard his blood as something unclean, something we want no part of. And he says that when we willfully choose to reject that teaching of Jesus, what we're doing is we are insulting the Spirit of grace. Does God take sin personally? You better believe he does. For goodness sakes, how else could he? How else could he? That's what sin is. I tell you what, though. Here's the good news. And when you recognize how horrible sin is, isn't it great that there is good news? Thank God there is a good side of this. He is willing to forgive. And the reason why he's willing to forgive, as we really have already seen, is because since he is a person and since he loves us and cares for us as that father would his child, as that husband who loves his wife, God is absolutely willing to forgive us. No matter what we've done. No matter what we have done. That's how gracious and magnanimous a person he really is. In Romans 5, the Apostle Paul says, but God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Much more than having now been justified by his blood, we shall be saved from the wrath of God through him. Sometimes people who are Christians and then fall away, they think in their minds, I am so awful. Since I am a Christian, I was a Christian, I knew what was right, I knew the right teaching. I'm not like somebody out there in the world. I knew what was right, and yet I still just rejected God. I still rejected his son. I'm just beyond the pale of forgiveness. That's what a lot of people think. And Paul's point is no, it's really just the opposite. Because when we were not Christians, we were the enemy of God. And yet he sent his son to die for us, the enemy, in order to make us one of his children. Well, yes, we as one of his children, it is egregious. It's even more egregious that we have rejected our father, the one who loves us. But it's because we are his child, and he does have so much love for us that he is all the more willing for the blood of his son to cleanse us once we're Christians, even if we are an erring Christian, all the more willing because we're not the enemy that we were originally. Now we are his child. We're one of his people. And when we fall away, when we need his forgiveness, he's all the more ready to forgive and all the more ready to allow the blood of his son to cleanse us of all unrighteousness. That's the way God is. That's the kind of person he is. And I just want to say to you, my feeling about all that is, thank God. That's the way he is. God is willing to forgive. My friend, it doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter what your life has been like. He's absolutely willing to take you into his arms and to allow the blood of his son to cleanse you of all unrighteousness. Is there someone this morning who needs to be baptized into Jesus Christ? Is there someone this morning who needs, as an erring Christian, to seek the pardon, to seek the prayers, to make your life right, to get back on the right path? Can we assist you with any of that? Remember who God is. And won't you come when together we stand and sing a song of encouragement?